Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, is Yahoo going to buy Tumblr? How do you get rid of all those permissions that your apps are giving your other apps? And is Andrew Mason off his rocker? All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 111, recorded May 17th, 2013. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code SOCIALHOUR5. And by Social Media Solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media with Social Media Solutions from SAP to improve your customer service and support experience. Take a guided tour at sap.com/twit. And by audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another fun-filled episode of The Social Hour. I hope it's going to be fun anyway. From Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and I am in Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island, Canada, where I am originally from. And I was speaking at a conference out here this morning. I'm staying overnight and visiting with some family. So I guess I was only home for a week or so, Sarah. It feels like I don't have very long runs in Toronto. And this trip is yet another little trip I have. And then I think I'm home for a bit. So that will be good.
Well, you certainly are. You are a comfortable traveler. That's for sure. Prince Edward Island is one of these places that has always been very intriguing to me. I know that you're from there, Amber. Is there anything that Prince Edward Island is like known for besides obviously oysters?
Anne of Green Gables,
Anne
Sarah.
Of Green Gables. Now,
yes.
Was that where the series for PBS was shot, or was that historically where she was supposed to live?
So the book was based on a girl who lived on Prince Edward Island.
Okay.
It was written by a woman who wrote it while she was living here. And so it's based on a book and the character Anne of Green Gables. And, eventually a couple of different movies and series got made. Some of them were made in this part of the world. And what I mean by that is probably somewhat on Prince Edward Island, but also New Brunswick, places that look similar. But everything in terms of the Anne of Green Gables franchise is essentially based on Prince Edward Island, so much so that I actually went to the Lucy Maud Montgomery Elementary School, the name of the author who wrote the book, when I lived here. So,
funny.
It's a big deal. Big deal out here.
Well, the books are great. I absolutely
they
love
are.
Them. They're that's
yes.
That's so cool. You know, it's funny.
Yeah.
We share another friend from Prince Edward Island, Daniel Burka.
I know.
I mean,
yeah.
What are the chances?
It's very, this is a small place. There's 130,000 people approximately on the island. And just so funny that Daniel's from here, his family's from here, and he lives all the way out in San Francisco now. And just kind of bizarre, to be honest with you. But, maybe it's something in the water. Who knows?
Maybe it's something. Or the dirt, right? There's some red dirt. Too.
Potatoes. Yeah, we're famous for potatoes. I was going to say something the potatoes, but then I thought, that might be a little tough for people not familiar with this part of the world. But something the potatoes may be a little more precise, I think, in some ways. But it's a great place, absolutely beautiful, especially in the summertime. So happy to be here. And it's a long weekend in Canada. Is it a long weekend there, Sarah?
No, we've got Memorial weekend coming up, which will be a long one. You and I are... No, actually, we don't have to worry about that because we get Monday off, so it won't affect our Friday schedule. But
okay.
But yeah, so is it the same idea?
Yes, this is Victoria Day weekend. So, I mean, same idea in that it's a Monday off and a 3-day weekend. Historically, obviously, I'm sure lots of differences there. But we typically have some of the same holidays, I find. It's just sometimes they're a week off or something. And it seems like we're sharing more and more holidays as time goes on. So very close neighbors we are, Canada and the U.S., of course.
It's true. It's true. In fact, on TNT this morning, we were talking about how BlackBerry basically percentages of the smartphone market, you know, had risen in Canada. And we were all sort of sitting around saying, well, you know, I mean, RIM historically is from Canada, so that kind of makes sense. I mean, do Canadians have different buying habits than, you know, Americans? It's like nobody could really come up with a good reason why we would. But anyway.
There's a lot of loyalty towards BlackBerry in the country. I mean, I think you do get that. I mean, think about them. They really changed the smartphone marketplace in many ways when they came out with the BlackBerry initially, you know, such a powerful device. So there's a lot of loyalty, a lot of people cheering for them in Canada. So I think that's where you may get the usage maybe a little bit higher as far as BlackBerry users. So, yeah, not a big surprise. But anyway, we have so much other news to talk about, social media news. Sarah, it's just been one of those weeks. It seems like there is a lot of news, a lot of things happening, and once again, Yahoo at the top of her headlines, which seems to be happening more often these days.
Yeah, it's true. Marissa Meyer wrote a little post yesterday on yodel.yahoo.com, which is kind of a, you know, keeping everyone abreast of what's up in the corporate world of Yahoo, explaining that Yahoo and Twitter have teamed up to, as she says, give you updates from politicians and celebrities and particular media outlets, various publishers on important news. So if you go to yahoo.com and you're in the habit of visiting Yahoo on a regular basis, along with news headlines, which of course you would click into and then read the rest of the article, you will start seeing tweets peppered in there with an easy to click on follow button. If, for example, there's a tweet that comes from ABC World News, for example, you see the tweet, the link would be added there because it would probably take you back to abc.com. And then you could easily follow the originator of the tweet straight from yahoo.com. You know, Amber, at first I was like, ooh, Yahoo and Twitter, they're entering a partnership. This is certainly good for Twitter because I'm sure that they'll see a lot more followers on brand pages, brand accounts. I'm not so sure if it's so great for the news experience at Yahoo, because really it's less of a blurb of what the story is going to be, and it's just a tweet that explains what the story is going to be. You know, it's almost like you're adding another click at yahoo.com. I'm not sure how I feel about this. What do you think?
Yeah, it feels like you're giving people another reason not to go to Yahoo to find news, right? It's sort of a statement in many ways that everybody knows Twitter is one of the first places people go to get their news. I find myself when there's breaking news, you know, I'm refreshing Twitter all the time and searching for a certain term, and I'm literally waiting for the updates, and that just seems to be the best place to get all of that information as far as news breaking around the world. So it makes sense. I think you're right, but I do think it also kind of signals where people are going for the most part. And, you know, I can't imagine the benefits for Yahoo so much, but, like you said, for Twitter, obviously, you know, reinforces their position that they have now.
Sure. Well, you figure, I mean, I've stopped doing it, but you get a fair amount of people who are, contributing to Facebook straight from Twitter, who, you know, you click back to the original tweet type of a thing, or, various types of places where people hang out and get news. So in a way, I guess it's good for Yahoo to say, hey, Twitter's baked into the Yahoo experience because we're hip, you know, we're cool, and we're not being left behind as some, you know, first gen media organization. So it's probably a positive thing for all parties. But yeah, I definitely see this being a better win for Twitter in the end. Amber, speaking of Yahoo, there was quite a swirl of rumors on various publications. We had All Things D and Adweek, I believe, that Yahoo was possibly in the market to buy Tumblr, which, of course, is a social network and kind of a blogging community. And well, it's kind of exactly whatever you want to make it. But the idea of microblogging, blogging, right? Tumblr's been around since, gosh, I made my account in 2007. So it's certainly, as far as internet years, been around a while, has quite a big user base. In the last hour, a story just, I'm looking at the Verge article, story just came out that Yahoo is now holding a press event on Monday, May 20th. And they don't say anything except join us as we share something special. But people are saying this is probably an announcement that they've bought Tumblr or are planning to. Rumors said that the deal could be as high as $1 billion. So, you know, it's sort of Yahoo's Instagram.
Yeah.
Amber, I'm not the biggest Tumblr user as of late, but I certainly do check my dashboard, which is kind of like my Tumblr news feed, regularly. And I have been a Tumblr member ever since I, you know, ever since it came across my radar. And it's a big community. Do you think that Yahoo is the right buyer for Tumblr?
Yeah, you know, I don't really use Tumblr all that often. Obviously, I've been familiar with it for a while. I think, you know, I think Yahoo just wants to kind of get back in the game. You know, looking at this All Things D article, see, the headline really says it all, saying they're trying to be cool again. They're looking for a younger audience, and a Tumblr is going to put them there, I think, in many different ways. And as far as the price tag of $1 billion, don't totally get it, especially when we have reports in this article based on Forbes reporting that Tumblr generated $13 million in revenue last year, saying they could do possibly as much as $100 million this year. But that price tag seems pretty hefty. However, if Yahoo wants to look hip and young and trendy and cool, I guess it's their best bet right now, because I'm not seeing a whole lot else going on there that would help them get to that place.
Yeah, I think Tumblr is definitely some, you know, it's a, that Tumblr would up Yahoo's cool factor by a lot. I mean, there are a lot of young people using Tumblr, and it's an extremely active community. I mean, there's people of all ages, really, because again, talk about whatever you want on Tumblr. In fact, Tumblr has always felt a lot like a much more multimedia version of Twitter to me, although the two companies have moved away from each other a bit. You know what also I think, Amber, is going on here is Tumblr for many years didn't monetize the brand at all. And in fact, the founder, David Karp, said, you know, he went on record as saying, I'm not interested in doing that. That's not the experience that I'm trying to provide anybody. Tumblr now does advertise, but it's very sparse. It's sparse. It's only certain pages on, I believe it's their Tumblr radar page, and you don't see much of it. Now, if Yahoo wants to spend $1 billion for Tumblr because they know that Tumblr is ripe for generating revenue with monetization that it's not currently taking advantage of, then I can see why they'd pay so much for it. And I think that, you know, again, to make the comparison, because we're talking about $1 billion, to Instagram and Facebook, Facebook's thinking the same thing. I mean, Instagram, the experience hasn't changed much, but it will eventually. It's not just about the users. It's about, you know, leveraging those users into something that becomes profitable for everybody. And that worries me a little bit, because then the Tumblr experience will change. But I am certainly not naive enough to think that a great service just stays great and never tries to make any money either.
Yeah, I know. I guess, though, when you look at the money, you know, another thing, and I was just thinking about this, I recently had a chance to interview the CEO of Netflix, Reed Hastings, and was just chatting with him. And then I was thinking back to that contest that they had a while ago where they asked people to come up with a new algorithm, I think, for kind of tagging some of the content on Netflix. I don't know. I can't remember all the details, but the prize was like $1 million. So then I'm thinking about $1 billion. And wouldn't it be great if Yahoo did something a little more creative with that money, in the sense that, imagine if they had a contest, asked people to build a new app. I mean, there's room out there, I think, for another cool piece of technology. And for $1 billion, surely Yahoo could build like 10 awesome apps, you know, original technology that was amazing. No, I mean, if they actually had a contest, or they, you know, they reached out to maybe to app developers who had done other interesting things. It just, I don't want to say it's like a cop out, but it's like, oh, that we'll just go buy this, we'll go buy that. It just doesn't show a lot of creativity on their part, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, you know.
I think it's also, I mean, it's curious, because we're used to these apps, you know, they get built, they get a lot of users. There's a lot of momentum. They're on the up and up. It's the hot new thing everybody's talking about. And then the big company will snap them up just almost before somebody else does. There were rumors that Facebook was also interested in Tumblr. You know, this isn't a done deal yet. Yahoo has not bought Tumblr yet, and we don't even know for sure that the announcement on Monday is about this, although signs are pointing to it. But that's another thing. You know, we get into these bidding wars, too, where Yahoo may think, Facebook would be too powerful if it owned Tumblr. We basically, it's almost a defensive strategy.
Sure.
So, and again, Tumblr is not... It's not the hot new thing, but it certainly does have a lot of users. So again, there's opportunities for Yahoo.
Exactly. All right, Sarah. So speaking of something that's really hot, Google Glass. Now, I have not seen Glass in the wild. As far as I know, in Canada, no one actually has Glass. What about you, Sarah?
Oh, luckily for me, I am surrounded by Google Glass and people wearing Google Glass. In fact, Jason was wearing Google Glass throughout Tech News Today. Today he was streaming the show from his POV, and you know, I've actually never put Google Glasses on until this very second because I think that they look silly. But well, that's not really why. It's because no. Oh my gosh! Wow. Okay, Glass.
Oh, no. We've lost Sarah. Now you're going to be going into
sorry about that.
Another world.
See, and this is what happens when you do Glass for the first time. You get that, like, strange look on your face.
This is the most antisocial podcast I've ever done,
I just looked up something
there.
Called Hubcaps at 1548 Bonanza Street in Walnut Creek. Take a picture. Nothing happened.
You look like a crazy person.
I feel like one. Okay, Glass. Go back home. Front page. Well, no, that's all I got. This is weird. Oh, directions.
Wow.
Okay. Wow. It's buzzing at me now. Stop it.
Hilarious.
Google Glass is alive. Wow. Okay. I don't want a pair of those. I would never get anything done. Are you kidding? Amber, that was really strange. Thank you, Jason.
You're welcome.
The thing that's going to happen, and this was because Google I/O is this week, and so people are talking about everything Google, and we've got more Google news even later in this show that pertains to social. But Google Glass is working with developers to, you know, basically get a variety of apps that people can run on Google Glass. For example, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, CNN, Evernote, even Elle Magazine, which is, if you're not familiar with it, it's sort of a fashion and beauty magazine. And I have to ask you, Amber, I'm putting on these glasses and I see, you know, right now I'm looking at a map. Okay, so that's fine. But I mean, what am I going to get out of headlines from my favorite beauty magazine or even really my Tumblr dashboard? Is that something that you want sort of in the corner of your eye all the time? I'm wondering how well these apps will be when it's not actually a laptop or a tablet or even a smartphone experience.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I think there is that kind of wow and cool factor initially. But as someone who wears contact lenses and should wear glasses, I don't even like wearing glasses, even if I need them to see. So the thought of actually putting something like that on and having so many different distractions, I think I would love to try it. But I don't know. I'm not really that wowed, I think, by it. I think it's, you know, a little bit gimmicky, if I can say that. Although, watch, I'll try it. And I'll love it or something, who knows. But nonetheless, you know, it's interesting. It's fun to watch all of these people testing out Glass and commenting on it and all the apps being built for it. I just can't even imagine. It's like one of the last things I can imagine incorporating in my day. I kind of like the separation between me and technology in the sense that I can put my phone away, but the glass thing, it's too close.
Right. it's on your face and it's kind of
it's too close.
There's a lot. Well, and there's the conversation where it's like, okay, well, so you have a Twitter app, say it's your Google Glass Twitter app. Like, I can't have my Twitter feed scrolling in real time because that's just straight up dangerous probably. But if I got a DM every once in a while, because direct messages are usually something that, you know, needs to be taken off of the regular stream. It's, you know, maybe more of a private conversation or whatever. That might be something that I'd want to pop up because I don't get those very often. Days go by and I don't get any DMs. It's not really the number one way that I talk to people. So that could be something that, you know, maybe a setting. Or or that sort of thing. But then it kind of like, then you get into a situation where you think, well, if the Google Glass experience of a very popular app like Facebook is really, really great because it's stripping out a lot of the noise and giving you just the stuff that you really need, will people start to feel like, well, that whole full Facebook experience I never really need because I'm so used to the more simplified version of it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a streamlined version of it almost, yeah. Right? Yeah, I could definitely see that. I personally just can't see really ever using this technology, at least in the next few years. It just, it would just seem to be too much, you know? And I don't know. I think it's interesting. I think it's kind of fun to watch the creative process and things that are coming out. But I'm just not 100% sold. I mean, there's plenty of other things that I think I would like to have in the technology space. And I'm just not sure that Google Glass is high up there on the list. Besides, Sarah, during this conversation, every time you put them on, I notice it's like you're in a whole other world.
Oh my
and
gosh.
We're disconnecting. We're not even connecting anymore. It's over between us.
It's true. It's like I'm...
It's over. Look at this. You know this great
this
chemistry?
This would be the most annoying brunch date ever. And it's going to happen. It hasn't happened to me yet, but... You know, and you'll see where you're like, you're looking at your glass again. I can see it. I can see your pupils. They're looking over me.
At least with the smartphone, you can like hide it under the table and kind of cheat a little bit. But yeah, this is somewhat obvious. Sarah has left the building.
Am I supposed to wink?
That's a hack that you can do.
Oh, really?
There's a sensor.
It's funny how much you wink.
And you can do it. You can set it up, but I don't have it set up.
Video.
This is really the moment to tell Sarah she can do all these funny things that actually don't work.
Photo.
You swipe down on the side; it'll kind of go back and start over.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So tap it.
I'm tapping my face. Great.
Wow.
Yeah, this is awesome. I don't look dumb.
And swipe
Neato.
Left or right.
Yeah. Okay, Amber, I've got it.
Go.
I can't. No. Whoa. It's like, just take the ring away from me. Take it. Yeah. I don't want it. Too much power. Too much power. You can have it.
It is a little like that.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a whole other world.
Woo, that was a crazy Friday I just had. So let's move on. Google, Amber,
yes.
I'm with you. I honestly, it's like, it's neat. But I it'll be interesting to see which apps end up being really, really successful in this new wearable medium of ours that we can't seem to get away from. So Pinterest has some new pins, I guess. You can pass your pins onto your friends. We have to talk about Pinterest because it's maybe the most social networky social network out there these days. Even though Amber and I both say, I don't know. It's okay. But I guess you pin something and then you can easily send that pin to somebody that you think is going to enjoy it, which obviously helps Pinterest sign up new users of people who go, not only do I like what you sent me, Sarah, but I like this whole Pinterest thing that you're using. I don't know, Amber, what do you think? It seems like a natural progression for them.
Yeah, I think it's a neat little feature. People who love Pinterest, that's really hard to say, people who love Pinterest. People who love Pinterest, you know, they love the service. They love sharing on it. So this is just another way that they're able to pass pins on to friends. So a neat addition to the service. And I'm sure a lot of people will make a lot of use out of that. You know what? I know people who absolutely love Pinterest. They can't get enough of it, whether it's for recipes, or planning a wedding or party or whatever it might be. So for them, seeing anything like this, I think is just going to be advantageous to their whole experience on Pinterest. So kind of fun, I think. And what do you, Sarah, do you think you're going to start using Pinterest in a serious way at all?
Well,
anytime soon?
You know, it's funny. We're going to talk about the new Google Hangouts in just a couple minutes. And it reminds me a lot of Pinterest. So I think I have just one more reason. The problem I have with Pinterest is that, and this is really not Pinterest's fault, because it's the trailblazer, right? Is that everything is the Pinterest of something, right? That you get your little square tile interface of a variety of topics. A lot of Tumblr blogs look like Pinterest to me now. That's just, you know, a theme that people can install and use. So I feel like I'm burned out on Pinterest without even using Pinterest. And that is not a good thing. It's probably not fair for me to say that because I'm not using it. And it's, of course, it's all what you make it. I mean, Pinterest is just a way to, for people to share whatever they want. So it's not as if it's like Pinterest is just for cats or Pinterest is just for women who love cats or that sort of thing. But I think that eventually the Pinterest interest is going to have to plateau. I'm kind of surprised that it hasn't yet.
Yeah, you know, and this is what I mean about the money with Yahoo, you know, $1 billion if they do end up buying Tumblr. I'm underwhelmed by some of the social services that we're seeing out there. It's great that they're adding these new features, but I kind of want something new. You know, I think obviously we've been riding the coattails of Pinterest and the Google Plus and stuff for a while, but it seems like there's a lack of innovation in the social space right now. So I'm just excited when we get on the show and we're like, oh, isn't that a cool service? And that's one of those services in a year or two that becomes really successful. And I feel like, you know, it's time to see something really cool and creative.
Yeah, me too. Give us something cool, world.
Yes.
Yahoo's got
money. We're gonna go build something if you don't give us something cool. Sarah and I are all over it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Watch out.
We've got all sorts of ideas, Amber and I. Boy.
We do.
You know, other people who have ideas are you because you send us great feedback each week. Thanks to everybody who does that. Quick reminder that if you want to watch The Social Hour live, you can do so. We're live on Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. And if you ever, you know, need to catch up on an episode or we talk about a story that's really interesting that you would like to share with a friend, something like that, our website is twit.tv/TSH. That is our mothership. It's like the Prince Edward Island of the Social Hour, you know, where we're all from. And yeah, it's we've got embedded videos there. We've got subscription links. We've got links to everything that we talk about in each episode. So you can definitely stay up with us. And, you know, remember, it's always nice to have you all live. But if you can't watch us live, or maybe you've got a commute and you can't watch us at all, but you do like to listen to the show, you can go ahead and subscribe there at twit.tv/TSH as well. All right, before we talk about Google Hangouts and a bunch of other stuff, we want to thank Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Had a platform upgrade last fall. Squarespace 6 rolled out, and since then, there are new product features, new integrations, and new templates. So even if you poked around a little bit 6 months ago or so and said, oh, cool, the new Squarespace is really, really awesome, it's worth checking out again because you've got more options than ever. And plans are starting as low as $8 a month for both software and hosting. So this is good value, people. It's not just about, oh, that's the pretty website I just made. It's about hosting that website. It's about being able to import social network activity. It's about new calendar features. In fact, this is actually really cool. It's called Events Collection. It allows you to share schedule updates. You know, like if you are a podcaster and you want to make sure, you know, like Amber and I, you want to make sure, ooh, we're going to be taping live on a different day. Want to make sure everybody who loves the show knows about that. That would be a great thing that you could update with the new Events Collection. There's a new template called Momentum. It's kind of like it's really good for images. It's like a big image display. Good for photographers. If you're a designer, this is a really good way to showcase your work. Even if you don't have anything to say, there are all sorts of options with Squarespace. Their page builder tool is called the Layout Engine. It lets you customize pages so you can add blocks of content. So you've got photo blocks, video blocks. If you want to write, there's text blocks. Like I said, social media. And they've got import tools for all the big social media companies. Tumblr and Instagram and Google Plus. And oh yes, even Pinterest. They wouldn't leave out Pinterest. Squarespace integrates all of your website needs. It's one platform for all that stuff. Domains, design, development, commerce. You can sell stuff right through Squarespace as well. Hosting, and of course, 24/7 customer support. I can absolutely vouch for their support. I've had questions over the years for my friends over at Squarespace, and they've always been extremely helpful, and that's the mark of a good company right there. If you'd like a free trial, give it a go. Go to squarespace.com. You just sign up for a free account. You don't need a credit card. You don't have to worry about that. You just try it out, start building your website, pick a template you like, and go nuts. If you decide to purchase a plan, use the offer code SOCIALHOUR5. So that's SOCIAL H-O-U-R, then number 5, all one word, and you'll get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. That's a monthly or an annual plan. So if you want to pay for a year, that's great. But if you want to go monthly, you still get that 10% off. That's squarespace.com, and use that offer code SOCIALHOUR5 when you sign up for a plan. And thanks to them for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. So, Amber, this is something that you added to our little lineup today, and I'm very excited about social media tips from Dr. Seuss.
This is just cute. You know, we've talked about on the show before that so many people are going out there giving social media advice, and sometimes you see the same articles over and over again. So I thought this was absolutely adorable, written by Pam Moore. And basically what she's doing is she's taking quotes from Dr. Seuss, and she's talking about how many of these quotes are relevant to people who are trying to use social media. Now, I'm not going to go through every single one of them, but number 7, for example, says, "A person's a person no matter how small." And then she writes, "Just because you have tens of thousands of followers on Twitter doesn't mean you're any better than the next person." And the list of cute little Dr. Seuss quotes go on and on. And number 15, "How did it get so late so soon? And then she mentions, you know, how every night she's on Twitter and realizes that time is going so quickly and she's made new friends. And it's just, you know, it's just kind of a cute post that you may want to read. It's kind of light and fluffy, but creative nonetheless.
I love this.
It's pretty adorable.
I have a soft spot for all Dr. Seuss material.
Oh, yes, me
I
too.
Mean, almost like, you know, Dr. Seuss, because it's all very poignant, isn't it? It's it's sort of this poignant prose wrapped in, you know, these, you know, cute little characters with funny little hats and they say silly stuff. But it's true. This is great. I love this. Be who you are and say what you feel, because those that matter don't mind, and those that mind don't matter. And of course, the subtext is, stop worrying what everyone thinks about you. Build your plan, work it, and get out there.
Exactly.
Yes, you'll need to manage your brand, reputation, and online image, but make it real. So this really is great advice for all of us in social media. You know, Amber, the Twitter quote that you read, that's all about kind of like, just because somebody has a lot of followers doesn't make them better or smarter or more successful than somebody who has just a few. I had a conversation recently with a friend who he's really, really talented and knows a lot of people and is definitely active on social media. And I mentioned to him, gosh, you know, I thought you would have had more followers. Like, how do you only have like a few hundred followers? And as soon as the words left my mouth, I realized how lame that sounded of me, because it turns out he doesn't really care. You know, he was like, but that's not my goal. I feel like the people who are following me really like the stuff that I'm doing. And I thought, you know, it's a really good thing to remember. Because people get all sorts of, if a follower translated to a dollar, maybe we should all care about having as many followers as possible. But it just isn't true. And we've all seen that. It doesn't even, you know, translate to the number of clicks that you get when you share stuff. So it's all about the quality, not the quantity.
I couldn't agree more. So a very cute article from Pam, and you can get a link to that on our site on twit.tv/TSH, because that's a good one to share. Now, Sarah, you mentioned before we had news from Google. Obviously, a lot happening in the Google space this week, particularly around Hangouts. I thought this was kind of interesting, because traditionally we think of Google Hangouts as something that launched in 2011 as part of Google Plus. Now, of course, Hangouts are much more. It's basically their messaging platform that includes the multi-video person chat, as well as Google Chat and the messaging features that we've seen before from Google, but now kind of all rolled under the Hangouts umbrella, cross-platform as well, and really kind of a seamless experience to go and use Hangouts now. If you're on an iPhone and you want to switch to your desktop computer, then it will be much easier than ever before.
I think this is great. I'm looking at the iPad app right now, the Hangouts iPad app, and Leo and I were fooling around with it yesterday, and we got on a call. I sent him a little photo of, you know, awesome, myself trying to look menacing, I guess. And, you know, so you can basically chat. You can easily send a picture. You know, that's easy. I can go ahead and choose from my camera roll. Of course, this is on whatever device you're using. I go ahead and, you know, type a little something in here and send that to, I'm not going to send that to him because he's probably going to call me and say, what was that message? We had a little bit of an issue starting a call yesterday, but we were blaming our actual network here at Twit. It didn't seem like anything that was seeing. I'm getting a video error again, so I don't know what's up with our network. It was a little clunky for us yesterday, but the idea is it's a video chat. It's a photo sharing tool. It's a basically an instant messenger all wrapped into one. And really, Amber, I mean, it seems like this is like a Facebook Messenger competitor. This is definitely a Skype competitor because you're adding the video calling into it. And then, of course, you've got that group chatting, right? This is actually a guy I used to work with. And he's inviting a group of us to a hangout. Quite a few people have invited me to hangouts. Okay, well, I don't have time to do that, but thank you, everybody, for the offers. And that's something that Hangouts was always good for, Amber, but I always felt like it was a little clunky just as a part of the Google Plus stream inside my Google Plus experience, the Hangouts thing. I like it broken out into its own experience.
It makes sense. I think this is one of the most powerful pieces of technology that Google has put out as part of their Google Plus platform, but really in general. And I think I totally agree with you. You know, it's like messaging on steroids. All of a sudden, you can do so many interesting things. And I think it will expose more people to the idea of having the multi-person video chat, which is such a cool feature. And for the most part, works really well. You can either do them privately or broadcast them live to anyone online. So really love this. And I think, you know, once people start to understand that Hangouts are so much more than just that multi-person chat that they have built into Google Plus, and it's all about messaging and pictures and everything like you explained, I think, you know, they're going to be one of the leaders out there in the messaging space. So I think it was a smart announcement on their part.
I do too. It's one of the nicest Google, certainly on the iPad, it's one of the nicest apps I've seen Google, you know, put out. Works well. And it's lovely. It's free, by the way. This is I mean, Google announced so many things this week, Amber. We could have done an entire Google social focus show, but I think by Friday, everybody watches Twitter is like, no, we did the live event. We've got this week in Google. You guys talked about it on TNT. We did a little thing on iPad today yesterday. So it's certainly worth mentioning. The Hangouts 2.0 is it's a good product, and if you haven't used Hangouts before, I mean, even if you're chatting with, you know, even like a group of people at work, you know, maybe you've got some remote friends. You and I could do the show on Google Hangouts, for goodness sake, if we wanted to.
Yeah, no, I use it all the time. Just within my company, there's six of us, and we do our weekly meetings using Hangouts, and it just works really, really well. Now, Sarah, for our next spotlight, it is a number two spotlight, we have this little tool that I've never heard of. It's called My Permissions, and this is kind of interesting.
Yeah, so the idea behind My Permissions, and by the way, thanks to Laurent, who sent us the tip, because, Amber, you and I were talking last week about how it's really good to periodically make sure that you don't have Twitter permissions or Facebook permissions, giving too much authorization to apps that either you're not using or might end up, you know, tweeting on your behalf or that sort of thing. It's just good to clean those out every once in a while. And that was, I think it was a life hacker tip, right, that you passed along?
Yep, it sure was.
And Laurent emailed us and said, you know what, I'm surprised you guys didn't mention My Permissions. This is actually a Chrome extension that I've installed. Jason, I don't know if you can take my screen, but if I go ahead and, okay, it's taking a second, scanning my app's permissions here, and it's basically pulling from not just Twitter, but basically apps permissions that I've given all over the social web, stuff that I probably don't even remember. And the idea is that in one handy little place, which is, and this is a completely free service, I can quickly get rid of stuff that I really shouldn't be connected to. So I can go ahead and say, okay, well, I'm kind of interested in, you know, what's connected to my Flickr account anyway? Well, geez, a lot. Look at this, a ton of apps, many of them that I'm not using. Home Run, which is the Yahoo homepage? Like, what? I don't need that. Whatever that is, I don't need it. Revoke permissions. And so this is something that, yes, I could probably find this permissions page on Yahoo eventually. It's probably not terribly hard. But to use something like My Permissions makes a lot more sense because it's kind of your hub for all of those apps' permissions. So I really like it, Amber. I think that this is I'm scanning it again. I probably went about this the difficult way. But, here we go. So, yeah, I mean, this is just sort of showing here are all the services that are connected to other services, and they share your account information in common. And it seems to work pretty well. My first reaction was, isn't that just yet another app that needs a permission to all your social networks? But it seems like a legitimate service. I think we should all use it.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I just actually wrote a little note to myself to try it out there. So that's always a good sign if you want to give it a whirl right away. So I got to try that out immediately.
Yeah.
And we also have this neat story that you found. And this was in the Wall Street Journal. And I never really thought about this before. I was reading this article about the CIA and how all of a sudden, social media has added a new level of complexity in terms of who they're going to hire to go undercover as spies and what type of social media following those people can have or cannot have. And it seems as though, putting more information out there if you're going undercover is obviously a bad idea. But if you have nothing, it's also a bit of a sign that something isn't quite right. So how do you find that balance?
I know.
I don't know if you have the answer.
It's a fascinating article. I agree. It's it's the idea that, of course, the CIA is the Central Intelligence Agency and, basically spies and, undercover work and that sort of a thing. And apparently the CIA now has standardized guidelines so that the people working for the CIA know how to use social media so that, there's a little bit of a balance. So if you reveal too much about yourself, then you're going to blow your cover. Mm-hmm. But if you don't reveal enough, if someone were to be suspicious of you and wonder if you were working for the CIA, then it would be obvious if you're, too much of a closed book. So the idea is, okay, well, so what's the answer? I mean, how much should a spy be talking about? And of course, there are some examples, and this Wall Street Journal article will be in our show notes, and it's really worth a read. It's awesome. But they have a particular instance where they talk about this one graduate of Colgate University. He was one of the first members of the social media generation whose online activities could be basically read against allegations that he was a spy. Mm-hmm. So if you comb through it, you can see details about, where he was sometimes or where he might have been planning to go. On a Facebook page, it said that he worked for the State Department. There were pictures of him in Russia taking a tour. So there are all sorts of little clues based on this one guy's profile that maybe something wasn't right, or that, he was maybe not who he said he was. Amber, I don't know what the answer is. I guess if you're a smart enough spy, it's kind of like, having that fake passport. Nobody knows is the wiser. But I wonder how many people are among us keeping up what seem to be very, very normal, innocuous profiles that are actually complete fronts for something else.
I so hope that's true. That would just add to the awesome factor of many of my Facebook friends who seem to sometimes post updates that, maybe they are a little dull sometimes. And if they had another secret story, it would be more interesting. Now, it's a really interesting. I like I said, I've never thought about this before. So it's got to be a bit of an issue. And I know at the end of the article, they mentioned how a couple of the different people working in the CIA, after this policy came out, they're wondering, well, do I defriend certain people who are undercover? But they realized that doing that en masse would lead to more issues because people would be kind of suspicious about what happened. And it just seems, difficult waters to navigate, right?
Absolutely.
There's no easy answer, I think, to that. It's just obviously you have to be thoughtful and really considerate and think about exactly what you're putting out there. And the same rules could apply just to the average person who's not even a spy.
It's true. I mean, it's that whole, hey, what's our expectation of privacy? Well, I mean, there's less privacy than there used to be, sure. Mm. But, with a service like My Permissions, where you can make sure that you're revoking permission on location, your location from an app that doesn't really need it, it's sort of like, if you are somebody who is working undercover and it's really important that people can't track you, that becomes less of a, hey, how annoying. Path, you know, posted where I was and I didn't tell it to. That I feel funny about that too. Oh my gosh, this whole, I've been working for months, you know, trying to, you know, spy on somebody because we're taking down some drug kingpin and Path posted where I was and now that, you know, the whole, you know, years of work is ruined type of a thing. So I guess maybe it raises the stakes a bit depending on who you are.
For sure. Definitely. Totally agree.
All right. Well, we've got some viewer feedback to get to in just a second. But before we do, we want to thank SAP. They are our second sponsor of the Social Hour. They were actually here in the Brick House. Some folks from SAP came up and watched the show last week, and they're a wonderful crew of people. This episode of the Social Hour is brought to you by a product from SAP called Social Media Solutions. It is helping companies use social media to improve their customer service. Well, you might say everybody does that if you're any company that knows what you're doing. But Social Media Solutions is not just about, hey, let's maybe search for our company name on Twitter every once in a while, or let's keep a Facebook page active and that sort of thing. Social Media Solutions has a couple of professional components. You can capture reports about conversations that are happening all over the web. You know, if somebody's writing about your business on a personal blog and they had some great experience, that might be something you really want to highlight the next time you are talking up your company, you know, to a potential client. If somebody is upset about a customer service experience with your company, that's something that you want to know about so you can direct them to the person on your team that can help sort out this issue. If you've got somebody that's ready to buy a product that you're selling, there are certain sentiments that Social Media Solutions can kind of pluck out of various social networks. And so then you can identify that person and help them make that sale. It uses natural language processing to automatically know sometimes if, you know, if somebody's angry or if they're happy. This is all stuff that helps you be a better business. Now, once you've listened, of course, then you want to reach back out. That is the engaging component. So you got the listening component and the engaging component. Customer service and support is all about engagement. So you can set rules about which messages to route to whom, who should be dealing with this very angry customer who had a bad experience and now there's this whole big Facebook thread about it, that sort of thing. And then, of course, activity on the social media stream. You just want to make sure that you're ingesting all of that. You want to get a sense of who's talking about your business and what are they saying? You can drive sales that way. You can solve customer problems that way. You can respond to customer feedback as quickly as possible this way. And it's all from SAP. So if you're interested in Social Media Solutions, if this sounds like something your business should be incorporating, go to sap.com/twit and take a guided tour right now. Or maybe just, you know, when the social hour is over. Or you could do it right now. You guys are multitaskers. sap.com/twit. And thanks to Social Media Solutions from SAP for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Amber, should we get to some of our viewer feedback of the week? I think it's about that time.
We have Leah who says, I just wanted to share how my experience with LinkedIn has changed over the past few months. She says she set up an account shortly before she graduated from university, mainly filling it with experiences working part-time in retail stores. She didn't really know what she wanted to do as a career, so she quickly took a job in a call center for an insurance company, followed by another similar role. During this time, she kept her LinkedIn profile up to date, but didn't really have much use for it, wasn't sure where she was heading. When she relocated to another city at the end of last year, she decided to quit working for the man and set up her own freelance translation business. And she says she found LinkedIn very useful. Now that she's working for herself, she's joined groups focused on her industry to gain different viewpoints and to seek advice from people with more experience. She also says she connects with people she's worked with and looks like, you know, just having that network in place is really, really helping her. She says she was once approached by one of the world's biggest companies to apply for a role with them. She didn't end up getting the job, but she's made contacts on LinkedIn that seem to be paying off on a freelance basis. So she says, now I found my passion for work. LinkedIn has become more and more useful for me. She says she loves the show and she doesn't get Snapchat either.
Thank you, Leah. I'm sure Amber and I feel better about that. Last week we were like, What's with the Snapchat? We just don't get Snapchat. It. Are we too
what
old? What's going on? I love this. I thank you so much, Leah, for giving us the great personal stories about how, you know, something like LinkedIn or any network really that's obviously got that social component is actually helping people. I think that particularly the idea of striking out on your own and going freelance, you know, building your own business, Amber, you have experience with that as well, seems mm-hmm. like a great opportunity for people to make a lot of connections on LinkedIn, because that's really the point where it's not just about making sure that you're in touch with people that you used to work with, but you really need advice. And there are other people on LinkedIn who are in the same boat as you, and maybe they've been really successful doing something that you're interested in doing. You can reach out, and it's easy to talk to people that way. So I think, yeah, Leah shows us that, you know, LinkedIn isn't just sort of like, it's where you keep your resume. There's nothing really going on there.
Yeah. Exactly. And Sarah, if you want to take the next email, this is sure. The opposite side of Snapchat.
Yeah. Taylor, who says, Taylor, I don't know if you're a man or a woman, so I'm just going to stay ambiguous. Taylor is 19 years old and says, I was interested in last week's conversation on Snapchat and how much teens like it. I actually like it for a reason other than possibly suspicious photos being deleted. I really don't have a reason to be concerned about pictures coming back for evidence or anything like that. However, sometimes I'm chatting with a friend away at college, showing her my room that I recently redid and decorated, you know, dorm room or whatever. I'll send her 30 quick snaps of everything in the room. I don't want them clogging up my photo stream and camera roll or hers. It's just a pain to go and delete those random useless pictures that I needed for a short amount of time, but not long term. I think that's a great... That really puts it into perspective for me, Amber, because it's like, yeah, these are photos that they just need to be glanced at, and then they don't need to be saved. It's sort of like, oh, here, let me show you, you know, all the views around where I am right now type of a thing. Or I could see maybe being bored at an airport, because I'm always bored at airports, it seems like, and, you know, talking to somebody about, like, the guy that's snoring next to me, and you kind of, like, take a picture, and it's like, it's nothing that needs to be saved. It just is there, and then it goes away, and everybody has a chuckle, and you move on. I promise I don't take pictures of people sleeping very often. but I think maybe we have to think of Snapchat a little bit less of like, ooh, these racy photos, you know, that we don't want to be saved, and more of just like, here's a view of my life right this second. I know you don't care 30 seconds from now.
I have to admit, I sometimes feel badly about beating up on Snapchat, because I do know there's people out there who use it in a really responsible way. And I've had friends of mine who've said to me that they've used Snapchat before, and they're basically, like you said, just, you know, quickly sending back pictures back and forth. So there are a lot of people who use it in a way that it isn't necessarily about sharing nude photos. Unfortunately, they have gotten a lot of bad press, and that's mainly how I believe a lot of people think about Snapchat right now. But very good to hear different use case scenarios from someone like Taylor, who's 19, who kind of fits in that demo that we've talked about before, and it's just using it in a fun way. And I'm guessing that when the Snapchat creators came out with the tool, that this is how they imagined people would use it on a regular basis.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And it's probably, there are a lot of Taylors out there rolling their eyes at all of the, you know, those of us saying it's for teens and it's about sexting. And oh gosh, you know, is this really where apps should be going? And they're sort of like, it's a tool, it's a utility. Yeah. You guys are just making something out of nothing. I suspect that that's probably what's going on most
part
of the time,
right?
Yeah. Well, definitely. Amber, let's move on to the social meltdown of the week, as I like to call it. I actually heard them talking about this on This Week in Law as well, and it's one of the most ridiculous social media. I mean, it truly is a meltdown of a business, an Italian restaurant that went absolutely bananas on the business's Facebook page after had the restaurant had been on an episode of Kitchen Nightmares, which is a Food Network show.
Oh yeah,
which is basically highlighting restaurants that need to step up their game, right? And I did not go well. It's called Amy's Baking Company, a boutique and bistro. And Gordon Ramsay's the host. And apparently, And he's a very strong personality. I don't watch the show regularly, but I know what it is. And he apparently thought that these people were so difficult to work with that he sort of like walked out and said, mm-hmm. I can't help you. This is a failure of an episode type of a thing. And they went kind of crazy on Facebook talking about, because the episode got a lot of attention. So it was being talked about on Reddit and Twitter, and people were saying, you know, these people are, you know, look at this crazy episode, and they're threatening people and saying that they're working with the FBI, and people on Reddit are laughing, saying, oh, sure you are. I mean, clearly you're not, because you don't seem to understand how social media works. And I don't know, Amber, I don't know what to think. I mean, this seems like just absolute deranged behavior, whether it's on social media or not. Probably wouldn't want to hang out with these people at an airport, let's just say. But what do you think? Is there any way to come back from behavior like this?
I don't know. I think it might be a good idea just to lay low for a while and not necessarily come back into the social space for some time, because, you know, it just snowballed out of control. And I really think people need to step back and think before they put anything onto any type of social media site, unless they want attention, right? That's the only thing that I can think about is, I don't know why they would, but if you wanted that type of negative attention, then I guess something like this makes perfect sense. Otherwise, totally don't get it. And it's just amusing to watch how things snowball out of control so quickly in this particular case.
Absolutely. Oh, apparently it's a Fox show, not a Food Network show. Sorry. I obviously don't watch a lot of kitchen nightmare shows because I don't want to suffer for an hour once a week. But, you know, somebody in... somebody in our chat room says, well, didn't their Facebook account get hacked, though? And here's where the story gets really funny, right? So you've got basically this barrage of angry, belligerent posts on Facebook, you know, threatening people and saying, we're going to come after you and we know who you are. And basically, stop making fun of us because we're, you know, crazy restaurateurs. And eventually another post went up saying, our Facebook account was hacked. We would never say such things. Okay, well, who believes them? You know, I don't know them. I don't know what happened. But that's usually something that happens when they go, oh, crap, when you're out of excuses or ways to explain your behavior, then you say, I got hacked. I didn't do any of that. I wouldn't do anything like that. The problem is that people already had in their heads that these people running this restaurant were extremely volatile and hard to work with because of the episode of the show. So at that point, you know, it's hard
it's
to get
tough.
People on your side.
It's a tough yeah,
it seems, yeah. sounds pretty suspicious.
You know, it's just, I mean, yeah, it's crazy, though, I think, how quickly things turn online. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't have turned here, but we have that kind of mob mentality, I think, on social networks sometimes. And it's a little bit frightening, I'm sure, for some people who just see, you know, all of a sudden a wave of people coming on so strongly. And like I said, I think these people, you know, they overreacted and then they let things kind of snowball and started writing inappropriate things. But at the end of the day, I've seen this more and more in situations where it's also very easy for a huge number of people to turn quickly onto a certain situation and just kind of lash out. And I think there's a little too much of that online, and a lot of people making a mistake there, I think.
Right. I know what you mean. It's sort of like what really needs to happen is people need to treat each other better, right? I mean, I guess
it's respect,
like,
right?
Yeah, it's like that's kind of the, that's at the root of the problem here, is that, you know, you're highlighting people who aren't working well together. And then you get this social media kind of like, oh my gosh, look at the crazies, you know, point and laugh type of a thing. And that doesn't help anybody. And social networks sometimes can just really emphasize that sort of a thing and make something a much bigger issue than it was in the first place, because so many people can get involved. And that's not always a good thing.
It's not. And I think, you know, I don't know if I mentioned this before on the show, but I always think, especially with online bullying becoming such an issue for younger people, you know, teenagers facing a lot of bullying on Facebook and other sites. But then I see some adults that I know or I'm familiar with, and I see some of the things that they put online, the attacks on other people or situations. And it just seems like if we don't really set a good example for a younger generation, I'm not sure how bullying is ever going to stop, because I see plenty of adults being a little too ferocious in the online space and they need to just, you know, chill out. Read some Dr. Seuss, Sarah. That would help them.
Exactly. Social media tips from Dr. Seuss. Get on that, people. Go to our website and, you know, chill out. yes, I know. Yes. You know what? That is very good advice from you, Amber. You know what we also have from Amber is Amber's Rad or Fad of the Week. Right after we thank Audible for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Audible.com is the best. It's the leading provider of audiobooks. And when I say leading, I really mean leading. It has more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all kinds of books. I mean, pretty much any book you could ever possibly want to read, you can listen to on Audible. And by the way, that absolutely counts as reading. You're getting the book read to you, and you don't actually have to be, you know, holding a book or reading it or anything like that. It's really, really cool. For listeners of The Social Hour, Audible is offering a free audiobook so you can get a chance to try out the service. Kind of get a feel for the audiobook experience. It's awesome. You know, Leo and I were arguing yesterday because we were watching an episode of Game of Thrones, the most recent episode, and he goes, "You know what? That scene wasn't in the book. They're going off of the TV show is different than the book." And I said, "Well, yeah, it was." And he's, "No, it wasn't." And it turns out he hadn't read the book yet. So this is something that's on Audible. And it's actually the Game of Thrones series, A Song of Ice and Fire, is the first book. It's a very popular audiobook because those books are dense. You know, if you've read them, you love them. But it's not for everybody, right? The audiobook version happens to be extremely popular because the books are awesome. But sometimes it's better to have it read to you. And it's also convenient, right? I mean, if you're a busy, busy person, there are all sorts of times that you could be listening to an audiobook that you couldn't actually, you know, have a book open, like when you're driving, or sometimes, you know, I'm walking to the gym or I'm on the treadmill, or I mean, even when I go grocery shopping, I've got my headphones in. You can get through an audiobook in all sorts of places. And what's cool is that even before you get started, you know how long it's going to be, you know who the narrator's going to be. You can hear a little sample of the book and just get a sense of, yeah, okay, I'm into this. I want to listen to The Great Gatsby. This is a 5-hour and 41-minute book. And you know, I like the narrator. You start seeing, you know, some of the narrators do a variety of audiobooks, and so you get you kind of get your favorites. And of course, The Great Gatsby is a wonderful book. If you saw the movie, I mean, you've got to read the book. That's why the movie is even there at all. That's audiblepodcast.com/socialhour to download an audiobook for free for listeners and viewers of The Social Hour. Any book you like, try it out for free. And if you cancel after those 30 days, you can still keep that book that you chose. So that's sort of their gift to you. But after 30 days, I think you're really going to like it. Audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. And thanks to them for sponsoring this episode of our little show. Well, it's all time, right, for Rad or Fad, and this is a weird one.
It is a weird one. So we've talked before about Andrew Mason, who recently was the founder and CEO of Groupon. Of course, he left the company a few months ago with a hilarious letter that he wrote to his team there. And it looks like he's up to some funny stuff once again. This time, though, it's not a joke, Sarah. I don't know if you read this headline, but it turns out that he is coming out with his own album. This is a music album, and it will be featuring motivational business songs. And the title of the album is called Hardly Workin'.
Wow.
And this, I guess, is the real deal, according to this article on TechCrunch. So he's obviously a funny, creative guy and is, you know, taking on some new challenges, I guess.
I guess. I mean, this is the same guy who kind of like, he wrote the goodbye email, you know, for Groupon. And some people accused him of being very flippant, you know, where he was making jokes about how he was, you know, going to like go on vacation and this and that. And at the same time, I think it's, you know, I don't know him personally, so it's probably, you know, it's a personality thing. Right. And I don't quite know what to make of this, Amber. I hope that this isn't rad, because that would almost mean that other former CEOs of large companies should be putting out music albums. hope it's a fad, I guess.
But if anyone can do it, I think that he is going to do something kind of interesting. I mean, he's such a quirky dude, right? And it's funny. I think they have a little quote from him on the TechCrunch article. And he says, basically talks about how he had managed more than 12,000 people at Groupon. And one thing that surprised him when many would arrive there with a minimal understanding of basic business wisdom. And they would ask him about what books he's read. And they would talk about business books. And he said, I came to realize that there was a real need to present business wisdom in a format that is more accessible to the younger generation. And there we go. Hence the Hardly Working album, which I'm not sure of the release date, but we will continue to catch up in this story. So let's hope it's not a fad. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I just don't want to see that.
Right.
or
you hope it is a fad, I guess.
I guess it depends on what you. I hope it is a fad. I don't know if I hope it's a fad. It's hard to say with this one.
Right. We're like, do we hope it's even a short fad? We don't know even hope that much. It's what's interesting too is sort of like the fact that it would be like a collection of songs that are supposed to be motivational for people in business. Yeah. And Mason probably does have some very good advice. Here's what I did right. Here's what I did wrong. I can certainly, I have no doubt that some people will find what he has to say extremely motivating.
Oh, yeah.
But the sing-song quality of it, it kind of puts it into silly territory before anybody even hears anything, right?
Yeah, I mean, we don't even know if this guy can sing. Right. The only way I could see it working is if it was sort of Weird Al Yankovic type of music, right? If it was just funny and poking fun at the corporate world, maybe that would work. But I don't know. You know what? I think it's going to be interesting. So we'll keep an eye on it. I can't wait to hear some of the music, I think. I don't even know if I want to say that. But it's a different thing. I know in the article they talk about it. Maybe it will be like a cross between Tony Robbins and Metallica. You know, who knows? That could have its audience.
Boy, maybe. Amber, you are optimistic.
I am.
You know, when I read a story like this, I think to myself, Andrew Mason obviously took a lot of money off the table before he got ousted at Groupon. And now he's bored and always wanted to be a rock star. And this is what we're getting.
Yeah,
I don't know
much.
If I'm right, but that's what it feels like to me. And he clearly doesn't care if people laugh at him. So in that case, bring it on. Hardly Working. I can't wait.
He seems like such a jokester, though.
Yeah,
you know, I don't even know if this is real. Even though he says it's real, do you really know if it's real or not? Based on the goodbye letter that he wrote, his letter to Groupon and really to the world about leaving the company or getting booted. But
this could be a bet with a friend. Like, let me see how many publications will write about my mythical album.
Could be.
And then how many outlets such as ours will talk about whether or not I'm, you know, going to be like performing motivational songs with a cat on my head type thing.
I feel like he's toying with us, Sarah, kind of. Not us, personally, but
he is.
The internet.
He's toying with the internet. Big time. Well played, Mason.
Don't mess with us. Yeah.
Well played. There's some motivational moral of the story here. I'm not sure what it is.
Figured it.
I guess that. Maybe it's the motivation for us to wrap it up. We've come to the end of our hour here on The Social Hour. Thanks to everybody who was with us for the live show and everybody who's listening or watching us after the fact. Thanks to all of you. That is it for this episode, episode 111, palindrome episode. Remember, we're live on Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. And we will be monitoring the social web closely between now and the next time we see you with a bunch more great stories and tips and tricks and social spotlights and all that good stuff. So we'll bring you a show, hopefully as good as this, next week. Until then, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and we'll see you soon.